We are in Perek Chaf.
I copied your page. It wasn't the whole page. Wow.
Perek Chaf. Last week, I think we read through the Perek. We read through the story. We're going to kind of go back now and look at it piece by piece. But there are a number of variables in this, or sort of broad questions in this Perek that we are looking at. And the most important to the beginning, at the outset, there's two major themes of this parak. One is the relationship between David and Yonatan, which is sort of the second piece of it, which we'll get to. But in the opening context, David comes to Yonatan to beg for his life and to explain, to get his support and to understand that Yonatan is... sort of explain to him what Shaul is trying to do. Yonatan is in denial. There's a whole conversation. We're going to reread the conversation in a moment. But there's two major questions, if you will, that hover over this perek. One is the relationship between Yonatan and David. What was the expectation and what was the end result? And the other is, what is the relationship between this perek and the previous one? Because there are events that take place here that are very similar to the events that took place in Perek Yotet, and that's sort of where we started. What is the relationship between these two stories? On the one hand, at the beginning of Perek Yotet, Yonatan says to David that his father is trying to kill him. It's Yonatan who informs David that that's what's going on. And Yonatan then confronts his father and gets his father to relent, and he appeases his father, and gets his father to take an oath that he won't harm David. Right, all of that was in Perek Yotet, actually the beginning of Perek Yotet. If you take a quick glance at it, just go back one chapter. It's Shaul who tells Yonatan, his son, and the servants that his intent is to kill David. Yonatan is very close to David. He doesn't want him to see harm come to him. Yonatan says to David, my father wants to kill you. Go and hide in the field. I'm going to go talk to my father. We'll see what his result is, and I'll let you know. Yonatan says to Shaul, why are you looking to kill David? David is loyal to you. David is good to you. David does everything for you. David risks his life for you. Why should you be guilty of killing innocent blood? Shaul says, that's fine. I agree. He takes an oath. In God's name, David will not die at my hand. Vayikra Yonatan to David, vayaged lo Yonatan et kol hadvarim ela, vayave Yonatan et David al Shaul, vayehi lefanav ketmol shelshom. Brings David back to his father, to Yonatan, and everything is shalom Yisrael. They live happily ever after for about a pasuk or two. So that's the beginning of Perek Yotet. And then we read at the beginning of Perek Chaf, Veivrach David Minayot Brahma. David runs from the experience with Shmuel in Nayot Brahma. Veyavo Veyomer Lifnei Yonatan. Me'asiti Ma'avani Machatati Lifnei Avicha Ki Mevakeshet Nafshi. What did I do? What was my iniquity? What was my sin? What was my crime? That your father wants to kill me. And Yonatan's reaction is surprising. Vayomer lo, chalila, lo tamut. What are you talking about? I take an oath, you shall not die. Hinei, lo, as yaase avi davar gadol davar katan v'lo yigla atozni umadu yastir avi mimeni et davar hazeh ein zot. My father would never hide something like this for me. One parak ago, his father said to him, his father wants to kill David. And now Yonatan says to David, it's not possible. My father would never want to kill you because he would, of course, tell me, and he hasn't told me a thing. Vayishava od David. So David takes an oath. Vayomer yadoa yadavicha ki matzatichem be'enecha. Vayomer al yadazot Yonatan pen yatzev. You know why you don't know about it? Because your father doesn't want to hurt your feelings. He doesn't want you to be sad. And a parak ago, his father didn't care about Yonatan's feelings. When his father told David, he told Yonatan he wants to kill David. Now suddenly he doesn't want to hurt his feelings. V'ulam chaya Hashem mechein nafshecha ki kifesa b'ni u'ben amavet. But I swear to you, in God's name, on your life, on God's life, there is a hair's breadth that separated me and death. Think of the chanit that Shaul threw at him. V'yomer Yonatan el David, ma tamar nafshecha ve'asalach. So Yonatan says to David, whatever it is you want, I'll do. So they devised this plan where tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. V'yomer David el Yonatan, yinei chodesh machar, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, I'm expected to go and sit with the king to have bread, to break bread, as they say, right? To have a meal. Vishlachtani v'nistarti basada ad ha'erev ha'shlishit. I'm going to go and hide in the field. In pekod yifkedeni avicha. If your father asks about me, so you'll tell him. Nishon nisham imene David larutz ubet lechem iro ki zevachem imsham l'chol ha'mishpacha. You'll tell him that I needed to go to Bet Lechem. My father's house needed me. I needed to go and celebrate Thanksgiving with my parents. Something to that effect. And let's see his reaction. If he says, great, okay, so then everything is hunky-dory. If he is angry, if he wants to kill me, if he demonstrates his frustration, then you'll know that what I'm telling you is true. Your servant has come into a brit with the king or with the prince. And do with me, act kindly with me. If I'm guilty of something, then you kill me. Don't take me. Don't hand me over to your father. Yonatan says, I take an oath, I swear to you, if I know that my father really has intent to harm you, I swear to you, I will tell you. It's interesting, that wasn't the question David asked him. Right? David didn't tell him to take an oath that if your father wants to kill me, you'll come and tell me. He doesn't need Yonatan to tell him that Shaul wants to kill him. David's request was, spare his life, let him escape, help him escape, right? And Yonatan's response is, if my father really wants to kill you, I swear to you, I will tell you.
That's not going to help him.
Right? It's not going to help him because he already knows that information, right? Okay. At least from David's perspective. Vayomer David o Yonatan, mi yagidli, who's going to let me know? When your father shows you that he really wants to kill me, how are you going to come and let me know? What are you going to do? Vayomer Yonatan al David, lecha v'netzei ha-sadeh. V'etzu shneim ha-sadeh. Let's go outside, says Yonatan. Let's go take a walk. Let's go out into the field. And there Yonatan changes the tone a little bit. V'yomer Yonatan al David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, ki yachkor et avi, I swear by God of Israel that I will investigate, I will question my father. Ka'et b'char ha'shlishi v'inei tov el David, v'lo az eshlach alecha v'giliti ot aznecha. If it's good for David, I will come and I will reveal this to you. I will tell you. I will open your ear, meaning I will let you know. It's an interesting observation. I saw somebody pointed out the phrase "legalot ozen," which means to inform or to, appears in this conversation twice, but in opposite directions. In pasuk Yud Bet, Yonatan says to David, "If I know, I will investigate what my father has to say, and I swear to you, I will come and I will reveal it to you." V'giliti ot oznecha. So it's Yonatan speaking to David. Go back to pasuk Bet at the top of the page. Vayomelo, well, top of my page, I don't know, top of your page or not, whatever you are. Go back to pasuk Bet. Vayomelo, this is David speaking to Yonatan. Vayomelo chalila lo tamut. Sorry, this is Yonatan speaking to David. He says, "Chalila lo tamut. Hine lo yaseh avi davar gadol davar katan v'lo yigle et ozni." Says Yonatan, "My father would never do something without letting me know." So here it's let Yonatan says, "God, Shaul would never do anything without letting me know." And the pasuk Yud Bet says, "I'm going to investigate what my father really has intended, and I will let you know." So the directions here are changing, and that's part of the complexity of the pasuk of the parak. I'm going to come back to it in a moment. Ko yaseh Hashem li Yonatan v'chol yasiv ki yetiv levi ra'alecha. V'giliti yot oznecha, for the second time, if my father really has evil intent for you, then I will certainly let you know. V'shalachticha v'alachta l'shalom, I will send you, you will go in peace. V'yeshem imach kasha yeim avi. V'lo imedeni chai, if I am still alive, v'lo tasei imadi chesed, you do chesed with me. V'lo amutz, that I should not die. Notice the tables are turned. Before it was David begging for his life, and David begging Yonatan to spare him, to protect him, not to kill him. Now it's Yonatan begging David not to kill him. V'lo tachrit et chasdecha me'im beiti ad olam, v'lo b'achrit Hashem et ovei David me'ish me'al pnei adama. If when you take account of all your enemies and you deal with whatever you need to deal with and you become king, I should not be counted amongst your enemies. ויחלות יונתן עם בית דוד, וביקש השם מיד לבית דוד. ויוסף יונתן להשביע את דוד, made David take an oath, ואהבתו אותו, he loves him, כי אהבת נפשו היה בו. Then they devised the plan with the arrows, but I'm going to leave that for a moment. We'll come back to that another time. So it's a remarkable turning of the tables in this parak. And there's a bunch of obvious questions. Why does he come back to Yonatan when he was on the run already? Okay, at the end of Perakhaf, Michal had let him out the window, right? He had escaped, and he goes running to Shmuel. After he goes running to Shmuel, he narrowly escapes Shaul's wrath, and he comes back. And he comes back to Yonatan. And unlike in Perak Yotet, where Yonatan is the one who is initiating the conversation with David about his father's wrath, here Yonatan is in total denial. Can't believe it. Can't accept it. David has to beg him to accept what he's telling him is true. He has to plan a device, a ruse, a test, something. So the relationship between these two prakim is extraordinary, including the question, why does David run back to Yonatan? Why is he expected to be at the meal with Shaul? What was that expectation, that after Shaul tried to kill him twice and that Shaul came running after him in Nayot Baramah, that David is just going to come back and sit at his table and have lunch with him like yesterday?
I have another question, because it goes back to this whole idea, if the whole thing with Shmuel anointing David, the whole thing Shmuel telling Shaul that you're not going to be king, your kingship's going to be stopped, and that he know, and he doesn't tell him who's going to be king, but he says another's right. going to be king, and he knows it's David. If he didn't have that whole thing happen to him, do you think he'd still be out for David if that part didn't happen?
Probably not. My guess is not.
It drove him crazy.
Yeah, he never accepts the Navi's decree. That's part of Shaul's failure.
Yeah.
Is that Shaul never truly listens to the Navi from the word go. That's ultimately why the kingdom is taken away from him.
Yeah.
And ultimately the source of all of his failures from the first failure in Gilgal until the last failure at Amalek is that he never second guesses the Navi. He never quite accepts at face value the words of the Navi. And so he's navigating here too. Navi says you're not going to be king forever. Meaning, I don't think Shmuel intended it to mean that you have to abdicate your throne today to somebody else.
Yeah.
What I think he meant is that you need to recognize that it's not your lineage and your line that's going to continue the malchus. But even so, how easy could it have been for Shaul to hand over the kingdom to David, who is his son-in-law? All you needed was Yonatan to step aside, really, for this to work. And Yonatan says it. We read those psukim, right? Where Yonatan, in the next parak, says to David, you're going to be king, I'm going to be your assistant. I'm going to be your second.
Yeah.
Yonatan is very willing to abdicate to David that role. So Shaul's line could have so easily have continued through his son-in-law rather than his son, and that would have been the fulfillment of the words of the Navi, and everything would have gone bishalom. But Shaul never quite buys the...
That's his tragedy.
And that's his tragedy. That's his downfall.
Because it's really not quite the same through his son-in-law as through his son.
Correct. No, I understand where Shaul is coming from, but you know, it would have been such an easy way to navigate the Navi's...
If he really wanted to listen to the Navi,
right.
He could have done it.
Right. Wanted his...
Imagine
I'm not sure that...
people listen to the Navi, but the ones that do...
But he also doesn't want to give up power.
But he's not being asked to give up power. That's the tragedy of it. Is that's how he interpreted it.
Yeah,
that David was a threat. But that's not what he's been asked to do. And certainly David was not going to do anything in his lifetime to push Shaul out of the kingdom. That's the depth of the tragedy, because Shaul constantly thinks that David is trying to push him out or kill him, and here David spares Shaul's life twice when he has the opportunity, when Shaul is clearly in the category of a road, they're trying to kill him. Later on, we haven't gone through those stories, but twice, Shaul is on the run, David is on the run, and Shaul is trying to kill him, and twice David has the opportunity to kill Shaul in self-defense, and he refuses to do so, because David is the king of Israel. So there's an element of... There's certainly an imbalance between the two, and we see the tragedy of Shaul's failure and the greatness of David at those moments. We really see the depth of the distinction between them. But all right, so coming back to the question, and I think we started this with a Radak. I'm not sure if we read the Radak. I think we did read the Radak. The Radak tries to navigate the question of what the expectation was of, from David's perspective, why he runs back to Yonatan and how Yonatan could have been in such denial. And what he suggests is, given the story in Perek Yetet, in other words, let me start one step back. The question of the relationship between these two chapters is so dramatic that it has led a certain school of thought, which I don't buy, and I'm not comfortable with, but has led a certain school of thought in the study of Sefer Shmuel to argue that these two stories are happening are either alternative versions of David's flight from the palace, chapter 19 or chapter 20. Take your pick, two different versions, two different authors, two different sources. Which, of course, we're not going to buy. But the approach is classic to addressing significant contradictions in the text. Or some more traditional approaches along the line of two different versions or two different aspects of the same story in order to emphasize different pieces of the relationship. What Breuer used to call shitat habchinot, the two different perspectives or aspects. We saw that a little bit when we looked at the two ways in which Shaul was anointed and the two versions of the story of his relationship to Shmuel. We had this reference a couple of times. But the Radak is addressing essentially the same question. On the one hand, he flees, the Imperik Yutet, it is Shaul who informs Yonatan of his intent to kill David, and here it's Yonatan in total denial that his father would ever do such a thing. There David runs away, here he comes back. He's fleeing for his life, and yet he's eating bread with the king. So how do we navigate these two stories? So the Radak offers the following suggestion, and we'll analyze it. He starts with the questions. Yesh lishol. How could Yonatan have promised David that which is essentially untrue? How could he say that my father would never want to harm you and not let me know? Everybody knew. He was chasing after David. He was looking to kill David. He ran off with the soldiers all the way out to Nayot Barama. So what do we do with this contradiction? Suggests the Radak, Yonatan, go back to the previous chapter, Shaul had taken an oath to Yonatan, he promised Yonatan that he would never harm David. Okay? So if he had already promised David, Yonatan, that he would not harm David, Yonatan is operating on the assumption that his father is true to his
word.
I tried to kill him with the spear. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty harsh. And he sent the messengers to Michal, to the house, to take him out of the bed, to kill him. And then he went chasing him after him to Shmuel's house in Nayot Barama to kill him. So three times he's tried to kill him after he promised Yonatan that he wouldn't.
Doesn't believe in promises.
Well, that's one. So Yonatan's obviously not of that opinion. So that's the question. What's navigating in Yonatan's heart, or what's navigating in Shaul's heart?
Shaul wasn't so stable, though.
Right, so we'll kind of come to that in a second. But to Yonatan's mindset, he says, "Ayach Hoshev Yonatan, ki mipnei ruach ra'a shaita mevaetet oto haya rotze la'amito ba'ad shaita baruach ra'a, ba'od shaya baruach ra'a." He says, this is all Shaul operating, being driven by this ruach ra'a, whatever this ruach ra'a means. And we had multiple suggestions or interpretations of it, but this ruach ra'a clearly overwhelms him at moments. And when it overwhelms him at moments, as it said in Perek Yutet, ruach Hashem ra'a el Shaul v'hu b'veito yoshev v'chanito b'yado v'david men again b'yad, when he threw the spear at him the second time, again, it was at a moment of ruach Hashem ra'a el Shaul. So he says, ki lo hayta l'ruach ra'a ela le'itim. This ruach ra'a was not a consistent state of being, state of mind for Shaul. It came and went. It was when he was overwhelmed by these. You know the expression, the devil made him do it.
Yeah.
Says the Radak, the only time Shaul wanted to kill David after he took that oath to Shaul, was when he was overwhelmed by this ruach ra'a.
So he's saying it's not in his control?
He's saying it's not in Shaul's control,
right,
but it is, he claims, in Yonatan's control. Lefichach, haya mafticho Yonatan, ki haya yachol lihishamer mimenu, biyot alav ruach ra'a. Says Yonatan to David, don't worry, everything will be fine. I can protect you. I now know the formula. The formula is, when my father is stable, it's great. When he's overwhelmed by ruach ra'a, then he's dangerous. So we'll watch him, and we'll guard, and we'll make sure that you are never alone when he's in that state, and we'll make sure that your life is spared.
That's a lot of burden.
That's a lot of burden, right. Especially because when he was overwhelmed by this ruach ra'a, what was David's role?
He's supposed to play music for him.
So he has to be in the room with him. But nonetheless, says Yonatan, we can arrange things. That he shouldn't stand next to him, and he shouldn't be within earshot of him. He shouldn't be within spear shot of him. Right? He should just
be out of range.
We'll protect you. However, says the Radak, this is all Yonatan thinking as Yonatan, meaning operating on the rational level of the promise he made to him in chapter 19. What he doesn't realize is what David knows, which is that Shaul has gone long past Ruach Ra. Shaul is now operating in a state of permanent paranoia, and he wants David dead no matter what. This is what Yonatan is not getting.
He's in denial.
He's in denial, but he's in denial on the basis of what he thinks is the rational approach, that in chapter 19 he made him a promise that he wouldn't do anything. So if his Ruach Ra'ah overwhelms him, he's not operating rationally, we can deal with it. But Shaul doesn't want to tell Yonatan that he really wants to kill David in all cases, because
he knows they're good friends.
Right, because, well, partially, and because he promised him, he made an oath to him. Or conditionally, Yatzev Yonatan, Kamo Shemal David, or he doesn't want to upset Yonatan, as David had said. V'gidol David me'avdei Shaul ha'ovimoto. But David knows the truth. David knows that Shaul really wants to kill him, and this has nothing to do with Ruach Ra'ah. How does David know the truth, besides the fact that he's at the front end of the spear? Right? But David also has other informants that aren't Yonatan, that aren't the son of the king. All of those servants, all of those people who in two chapters ago we read that they loved David, and that David was so popular with them, and that David was the one who everybody was loyal to, etc. We saw that. They loved him. So when David inquired a little bit, it didn't take much for David to figure out what Shaul's real intent was. Ki belev Shaul lahamito. Ki gilalem. V'istim Yonatan. Shaul told his servants... Who did he send to Michal's house to take David out of the and kill him? His servants. Who did he send to Neot Brahma times 1, 2, and 3? His servants. So he has people who certainly know what his intent is. Yonatan's not one of them. Lefichach nishba David v'amar chay Hashem chay nafshecha ki kifesa v'niyu ben amavet. That's why David says to him, "I take an oath. I'm swearing to you. You've got it wrong. He's trying to kill me." And Yonatan seems to have convinced... Now this, up till here, I would say, I think the Radak is a rational approach to the story and makes sense. This last sentence, a little hesitant to put this on tape, but nonetheless, I'm a little bit hesitant to buy totally this last observation of the Radak, where he says, "V'nim'a ki hichziro Yonatan lifnei aviv achar ma'asen nayot, v'ya b'shochan aviv ki yom b'yom." He says, it would seem that in fact David returned to his father's table, and David returned to eat with the king on a regular basis, and that's why there was an expectation that David would come to the Rosh Chodesh feast, and when David wasn't there, his father, Shaul, got upset. And that's on the basis of the fact that Yonatan would continue to protect them and guard against him. That's the Radak, and what he suggests is that there is a continuity, there is a connection between these two chapters, that in fact he does go back to Yonatan, and he does go back to the palace, and there is a certain business as usual, if you will, because Yonatan's promised him that he can protect him from this Ruach Ra'ah. He doesn't realize what David knows, which is that Shaul's intent is far more pernicious and far more dangerous than simply bouts of Ruach Ra.
So the son-in-law knows him better than the son.
That is true. And not necessarily surprising.
Is he naive, Yonatan?
There seems to be a certain naivete there. That's possible. It's also possible that, as David himself points out, that Shaul is shrewd, Shaul is a warrior. He's a cunning warrior. And he knows who he can trust and who he can't trust. And he doesn't want to bring Shaul into the middle of this. And bring Yonatan into the middle of this. So he's hidden from Yonatan. Especially, think about it like this. When, the last time he told Yonatan what his intention was, with the hope to sever Yonatan's loyalty to David and bring Yonatan over to his side, which was the beginning of chapter 19, what was the result? When Shaul confronted Yonatan and said, I want to kill David and I want you to side with me, what was Yonatan's response? We read it earlier.
Why would you want to?
He defended David.
He's done all these great things.
He defended David. So why would he do it again? Like, why would Shaul, if now that he's passed that oath and he's passed, why would he take the risk of bringing Yonatan into his inner circle of confidence when he knows that Yonatan's loyalties are conflicted?
They're in chapter 19,
well, they're conflicted.
He loves David.
You're right. Okay, well, we'll see whether they're conflicted
or not.
But
still is a little conflicted with his father.
Yeah, no, he's very conflicted. He's very conflicted.
He's not conflicted about
his friendship with David. Certainly not siding with Shaul, the intention to kill to kill David, and that's certainly what Shaul expected. You have to put into the story. You always have to put the expectation. When Shaul told Yonatan in chapter 19 that he was going to kill David, what was his expectation of Yonatan? That he would side with him, that he would assist him. When Yonatan confronted him, so Shaul backed off. Now he's dealing with his servants who are loyal to him and will go to the house and will go try to find David and he'll send to Ramah. He's not going to send Shaul. David knows that. So David and Yonatan are operating in two different levels completely. And here are these two friends who are blood brothers who are really who have made a pact between them, who will do anything for each other, and yet they're operating in two different worlds because A, they're conflicted, and B, because their experiences are such that Shaul has shared with Yonatan only part of the story, whereas what he's doing with David is a whole different picture. So they're completely, the conversation here is like two different planes. But maybe that's why David goes back. And here I'm going to view a little bit from what the Radak is suggesting.
But we never really said why, given all that, why...
Why he goes back.
But why Shaul would expect him to come to lunch after the three times.
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Shaul really does expect him to come. I think that he's... the truth is, I can't say that, because he does react. His first day, he says, oh, David's not here, he must have a good reason. It's only the second day that he reacts. Yeah, it could be that this Ruach Ra'az is playing a larger role than we give it credit for. That's possible. But I don't think David wants to take that risk. So if Yonatan is operating under that assumption, and even if Shaul is operating under that assumption, David is certainly not going to take that risk. So the question that I really think is the more powerful question here: why does David go back to Yonatan altogether? He's on the run already.
Yeah, that also doesn't make
sense. Why does he come back to the palace? And he does come back to the palace. He's clearly in the palace talking to Yonatan.
But how do I talk to Yonatan?
Does he really? He's already escaped. He's already on the run. What does he need Yonatan for? Just so that you can prove to Yonatan that his father really wants to kill him? His father he'll find out eventually. What does he need Yonatan for? What does he need to go back there for?
Maybe he feels that there's such a true friendship he's trying to.
Yeah, I think it's about the friendship.
Friendship. He feels so tied to
even him. If he never sees him, he wants to know that he's on his side. And,
right.
And for that, he's going to risk everything, including his life. He's going to go back into the lion's den. Why? Because he wants to have one last hug? And the plan that they devise is that he's going to hunt. Because it's unreasonable.
But maybe he knows that Shmuel's going to keep Shaul in one of his prophetic trances until he has this conversation.
No, on the contrary. He runs. Shaul, he runs away. Vayivrach David. That whole trance was to allow David to escape.
Right.
David escapes.
Yeah.
and goes right back to the palace. It goes runs right back into the lion's den.
But I'm just saying, maybe he thinks he has more time to make a little stop.
This is weeks. This is days. This is Rosh Chodesh, 1 day, 2 days. And Shaul is in the kingdom. Shaul is clearly there. And that doesn't work.
David at this point knows that he's going to be king?
Yes.
So then he wants to be on better terms. No? It wouldn't make everything work better?
Risk his life. So wait till Shaul dies and then deal with it.
I don't understand why you don't like this concept of one last hug.
Well, because first of all,
you
because
don't watch enough TV.
I'll tell you why I don't like it. First of all, because their entire plan was devised so that there wouldn't be one last hug. Remember the whole plan with the arrows? David is hiding in the fields. All of that was to send him a signal so that they wouldn't ever, so they'd never meet again. And the reason they'd never meet again is because it's unreasonable. If Shaul is really trying to kill him, and Yonatan, who is the crown prince, is to meet with David, David is a fugitive, David is an enemy of the state, then Yonatan is committing treason the moment he's seen with David in public. So there's no question that the moment David runs back to the palace, he risks not only his life, he risks Yonatan's life. Why would he do that?
So tell us, we're so curious.
I'm developing the question. It'll take us weeks to develop the answer, but we're going to develop the questions. Yeah. It's a problem.
You're trying to disprove this
one last hug. One last hug, I'm not going to buy. He will get one last hug, but I don't think that was planned. We'll come back to that issue.
So is there a logical reason?
So I think there is, but it's going to take us a little bit of time to develop it, but I'm going to start with a basic assumption. What was David expecting Yonatan to say? When David comes to the palace and he comes to Yonatan, Vayavo vayomer lifnei Yonatan. Beginning of the parak.
Chaf or Yonatan?
Chaf. Vayivrach David meniot b'ramah vayavo vayomer lifnei Yonatan. He tells his Yonatan what his father is trying to do, is trying to kill him. Yonatan takes an oath. He says it's not possible. David says it is possible. You're naive. You're not seeing it. Finally, Pasuk Dalet Vayomer Yonatan al David. Yonatan says to David, "What is it that you want?" So he says, "Okay, devise a test." Okay. At the end of this test, Machai, there'll be Rosh Chodesh, you'll go and I won't show up, then you'll see what he wants to do. Even Yonatan's offer test, the counter offer that he makes in the end, later on in the parak, is built around arrows and messages, etc. Here he just says, I'm not going to show up to tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh feast, and then you'll see what happens. What was he expecting Yonatan to do at that moment when he would discover in truth what his father's intention really was?
To send him a message.
Doesn't say that. V'asita chesed al avdecha, he says, Im ko yomar tov shalom avdecha, v'im charo yechre lo daki chatara ameimo. If he is angry, you'll know that he really wants to kill me. And therefore, do kindness to your servant, and honor the brit between us. I'm in pasuk chet. And if there's really an iniquity, if I'm really guilty, then you kill me. Don't take me to your father. But if not, then you'll know that your father really wants to kill me. Then what? What does Yonatan at that moment? What does David at that moment expect Yonatan to do? And notice there's a pause, there's a break, and Yonatan's response is, I take an oath. If my father wants to kill you, I will let you know. Im kaltara ame im avi lavo elecha velo agid velo ata agid lecha.
He should want to protect them, not let them know.
Say that again.
He should want to protect
him. What was David expecting Yonatan to do?
To protect him.
Or if he's on the run, he has to run. Yeah. David has to run for his life.
Right.
What was he expecting Yonatan to
do? Maybe to assist him.
To run with him.
Yeah, sure, to go with him and protect him. See which side he's really on.
If Yonatan's brit is with David, and Yonatan and David is forced to flee, then the expectation is that Yonatan will go with them.
Then he knows which side he's on.
It's more than just knowing which side is on is part of the equation, but there's a fundamental issue here. David is the designated heir to the throne. He knows it. Yonatan knows it. Yonatan has to protect David. And that's the critical question. Where is Yonatan's loyalty going to lie? What is Yonatan going to do? This return of David to the palace places Yonatan in a terrible predicament.
Poor God.
Because it forces Yonatan to take a side.
And it's a terrible position for him.
Right. But David needs Yonatan. Can you imagine for a moment what the story of David's life would have been if the crown prince would have sided with publicly and gone with David from the palace? Think about the fact that for the next number of years, we don't know how many, but let's assume for the moment 10, 15 years, however long it is, David is a fugitive from Shaul. He has to run. He has to hide. He's on the edge of dying of hunger more than once. He has to put together a band of warriors who can provide him sustenance and panasa by raiding, by protecting farms and shepherds from marauding nomads. He lives a very rustic and a very difficult life. He runs from the country, he runs to Gerar, he runs to Moab, he's got to run to all kinds of... He has to leave the country, he's a fugitive for years. Imagine what his life would have been like if the crown prince would have come with him.
And they'd both be on the run.
Or...
Everybody be
or this war would have ended within a week.
Right, Shaul would be out of the picture.
Yeah.
Why?
Wouldn't have been out of the picture, he would have made peace with it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been able to do it. If the crown prince, who has the entire, with the loyalty of the army, the loyalty of the people, he's the heir to the throne, if he stood up for David in public, how different would have the story have been?
It's like a done deal.
Well, Shaul might
have
given up.
Maybe. But the likelihood of David's protection and of David's life would have been a completely different story. David is fleeing for his life because Shaul, with his entire operation, has labeled him an enemy of the state. If Yonatan stood up in public and sided with him, so the whole question of David's status would have been different. And ultimately, embedded in this conversation is the question that we need to put on the table now. We'll come back to it at the end of the parak. What is Yonatan going to do? Right? He has a huge challenge ahead of him. Where is he going to stand in this picture? In truth, let's go one step back. Both Yonatan and Michal are faced with the same question.
Who to side with?
Right. What to do when David has to flee? And that, I think, ultimately is the real contrast between these two chapters. Chapter 19 and chapter 20 are two chapters that describe the events of David's flight from the palace from two different vantage points. That is true. I don't think they're happening in parallel, and I don't think it's two different versions of the story. I think they're happening sequentially. But from our perspective, there is enough parallel between the two chapters. They both start with the question of Shaul's desire to kill David. They both start with a conversation between Yonatan and David. They both place Yonatan in the position of being informed about Shaul's wrath. They both see Shaul pick up a spear and try to kill somebody. In chapter 19, he tried to kill David. In chapter 20, he tries to kill... Yonatan. Yeah, Yonatan, after David doesn't show up at the feast. And then it gets even better, because in both stories, David has to flee. In chapter 19, he flees where?
Shmuel.
Well, before he gets to that, before he flees completely, but when he leaves Shaul's presence, because Shaul's trying to kill him, where does he run to? Goes home to Michal. And in both stories, there is it's necessary for the person whom David turns to for aid. In chapter 19, it was Michal. In chapter 20, it's Yonatan, to assist him and enable him to escape. And in both stories, David is able to escape because somebody in the inner circle who loves him and who has a brit with him enables him to escape, empowers him, and orchestrates his flight. The difference being that in chapter 19 it's Michal, and in chapter 20 it's Yonatan.
But in both cases, neither one really owns up to the fact that they helped him.
Well, they couldn't. They couldn't.
Well,
that would be the end of their life.
And
that's true. And they both have to do so through subterfuge, because
right.
to do so publicly would have been treason. I would argue that both the two chapters are actually presenting us the story of David and his flight from Shaul's palace in two different contexts, because David operates on his relationship to Shaul is defined in two different ways. David is always living in two arenas. He is the son-in-law of the king, and he's the husband of Michal. Mm-hmm. Meaning, he's the next in line to the throne if Yonatan steps aside. And he's a son-in-law. And he needs to, if he's going to sever that relationship with Shaul permanently, in a certain sense, he needs to sever that relationship on both levels. So I have two stories that describe David's flight from the palace, but if you will, they present David's flight from two different places in the palace. Let's put it in those terms. In chapter 19, he flees from his house, which is a chamber in the palace courtyard, let's say. Mm-hmm. Right? From the house of Michal, from the bedroom of Michal. And in chapter 20, he flees from, where did this conversation take place?
The field, no?
Well, eventually it's in the field, but where does it start?
Yeah.
It starts in the palace. It starts with Yonatan, David coming to Yonatan as the crown prince in the palace. So, who enables him to escape? In chapter 19, it's his wife, and in chapter 20, it's Yonatan, the crown prince. David flees from the family and from the kingdom. And those are the two levels in which David operates all the time. Where is David when Shaul comes to try to take him out in the middle of the night when he flees from the spear? He's in the house with Michal. Where is David when Shaul expects him to be there and he's not there? At a royal feast in the palace. The two are operating constantly on a parallel level. And I think from a rational point of view, what's operating in David's mind is David has gone back to the palace in order to talk to Yonatan, convince Yonatan, bring Yonatan, engage with Yonatan, or separate from Yonatan, as you say, one last hug. But in chapter 19, it was Michal. He needed to separate from Michal. He needed to leave Michal. He needed to leave the family. Chapter 19, he has to go back to deal with the question of the status of his being the son-in-law of the king and the crown prince.
So he needed two last hugs.
And he needed two last hugs, he needed two goodbyes,
right.
In a certain sense. And both Yonatan and both Yonatan and Michal assist him in that flight. Let me add one more question. Of the two stories, Michal's assistance to David in his flight from Shaul and Yonatan's assistance in assisting David in his flight from Shaul, of the two, Yonatan or David, whose behavior is a greater risk, a greater novelty, a greater chiddush, a greater demonstration of that which I would not have expected? Michal or Yonatan?
You'll probably say Michal, but I'll say
I'm going to say Yonatan.
That's what I would have said, Yonatan. I thought you were going to pick
Michal. No, the contrary.
I think she was a greater risk if she was found out.
She's her husband. And she's his wife.
She's the daughter, too.
But she has no, forgive me, she has no status.
He's the crown prince.
Right? Her status is not as, he's the crown prince. Her status is not to be the next in line to the throne.
Right. So he's betraying not only his father, he's betraying the line.
His assistance to David, if it was to find out, would be treasonous to the point we'd be put to death, because he's the crown prince, and he's aiding and abetting the heir to the throne or the threat to the throne. Michal is assisting her husband from her father's wrath. How many wives side with their husband when their father get out of control? Right?
Not everybody.
Not everybody, but okay. But the behavior of Michal, I think, has a more rational expectation and ultimately more rational outcome. Yonatan is extraordinary. Because Yonatan, knowing that his father now wants to kill him, after his father tried to kill him, by the way, it's not the first time his father tried to kill Yonatan. It's the second time his father tried to kill Yonatan. Remember the first time?
Tried to kill him?
Well, what was the first time?
The thing when he won battle and he went on.
Right, Michal Machmas, where he said, if Yonatan's guilty if it be Yonatan, my son, guilty of treason, I'll have him put to death, right? And the people save him. The relationship between Shaul and Yonatan has always been complicated.
They didn't like each other.
Right. But Yonatan risks his life to assist David? Maybe.
Why didn't he go with him then?
Oh. And that's the question.
You're saying, though, that he comes back because he wants that loyalty from Yonatan.
I think he wanted Yonatan to come with him.
So it just shows that even though Yonatan does side with him and help him, he's still conflicted.
What we're going to look at next week as we read the rest of the story is we're going to take a much closer look at the text and the conversation between them and see where that conflict appears. Where in the conversation between them do we find that conflict, that tension growing between them? As much as it's a final hug, and as much as it's a final goodbye, and as much as Yonatan enables him to escape, but this conversation between Yonatan and David is a tragedy. Avoidable, unavoidable, not our issue. It's a tragedy. And the tension between them, the cracks in the relationship, grow as the chapter continues. And that's what we're gonna look at. I want to explore that in more detail. We need a whole shiur for that. So we're going to leave that for our next agenda. But I want to end with a medrash. Part of what we're trying to do is not only work through the pshat of the text, but every once in a while it's important to come back to Midrashei Chazal and recognize that Chazal had an ability to see through to a depth of the story in the pshat, but they don't always express it in the way you and I would necessarily read a text. Sometimes the language of Chazal is couched in midrashic story, if you will, or textual nuance. So sometimes we look at a medrash and we work off the medrash and work into the text from the medrash. Sometimes it pays to do it the other way around. To look at this text, look at the story, look at the experience of the pshat, and then come back to the medrash and see how Chazal hit the target so powerfully in their analysis of the text. So take a look at this midrash. It's a midrash in a completely different context. It's a midrash Tehillim.
Can I ask you a fundamental question?
You may.
Why would you not understand that a son in his heart wants to be with his father? I mean, why would that not be?
That's not the issue. That is a given. That part of the story we'll see is clearly in the text. What I think Chazal we're addressing with the relationship between chapter 19 and chapter 20, the parallel between Michal and Yonatan, and the contrast between Michal and Yonatan. That's what I was looking at. So this Medrash in Tehillim, but the context of this Medrash of how it gets to here is not our issue. Tavima shnayim min achad. It's a pasuk from Kohelet. Tavima shnayim min achad. Two heads are better than one. Says the Medrash, Zu Michal bat Shaul v'Yonatan. These two that are better than one, these two, this pair that we were talking about in the Medrash, is Michal bat Shaul and Yonatan. Shayu shnehem o'avim l'David. Two.
Where are we?
Source two.
Second source.
Medrash Dalem. Shayu shnehem o'avim l'David. Both of them are described as loving David. B'michal k'tiv u'michal bat Shaul a'avatu. Michal, it says, Michal bat Shaul loved him. U'b'yonatan k'tiv v'ya'aver Yonatan k'nefsho. Yonatan loved him like a soulmate. And here's the clincher. Michal mimaletet oto min habayit v'yonatan min achutz. Both Yonatan and Michal enable David to escape. Michal enables his flight from the Bayit. Yonatan from the courtyard. Minachutz. Michal enables him to escape from the house, the family, the relationship between Shaul, Michal, and David, the familial context and circle. Yonatan, the external is the kingdom, the external is the chutz, the external is the sadeh. Notice where Yonatan takes David out into the field. And then from there, with the arrows, all symbols of the kingdom, all symbols of the malchus, from the palace to the courtyard and the fields to the arrows in the army. And the process by which Yonatan enables David to escape are all symbols of malchus. Military symbols, public symbols, chutz, arrow, palace. The process by which Michal enables him to escape was the disguise in the bed. It was private. It was the bayit. Those are the two circles in which David operates. His relationship with Shaul is on two levels. He flees, he runs from both of those relationships, from both of those concentric circles. And therefore I need Michal on the one hand in chapter 19 to allow him to escape, and then chapter 20 I need Yonatan to enable his escape. And those two stories will essentially sever the relationship between David and Shaul. David will never come back to the palace until after the death of Shaul. But these two chapters, therefore, they're not happening in parallel, but I need them both in parallel to reflect these two departures of David from both of those relationships, and they're very different. And that they will navigate between them over the course of the rest of the Sefer, but that's the challenge between them. Questions? So here's our work cut out for us for the next two classes. I think we'll have two more shiurim on chapter 20, and then we're going to move on. I want to now go back to the conversation we've read up until this point. I'm going to read it one more time. Not today. But I want to come back to it from the perspective of the relationship between Yonatan and David, the personal relationship between them, the as we said, the expectation from David that Yonatan would come with them, and that expectation coming falling short. What is the nature of that tension between, how does that tension play out in the conversation itself? And then following that, we'll come to the end, second half of the story with the story with the arrows. What actually was planned? What was the, so to speak, the...
What was the whole point of that?
The point, or the, right, the no point pun. Of an arrow, no pun intended. Right, what was the point of the arrow? The arrow was very pointed. What was the expectation of this game played with the arrows? And ultimately, they get up for one last hug. So what do I need the arrows for?
Right.
What do I need the arrows for?
Just have a conversation.
Exactly. So all of that is our agenda for the next two classes. We should, hope be able to finish this parak in two more sessions, and then we can continue.